Hello there, this is the Psychology Report. Today I'd like to address a topic that no one wants to talk about. I don't like to talk about it. It's a difficult subject to address, and you always have a fear that when you talk on this subject, you're going to instigate or you're going to trigger somebody to take an action that would not be in their best interest and for which you would feel very guilty the rest of your life. That's the topic of suicide, especially for teenagers. In the life of teenagers, this is a major issue. You know, a study was done in the Central California area of Fresno, and Fresno came up with a study in where they looked at the responses of some 400 high school kids and asked them the question about, did they ever feel lonely? Did they ever feel like they're alone and in a difficult and desperate situation? So of the 400 students that were interviewed and filled out a questionnaire, about 10% of them said that they were in a situation in which they felt depressed and they were difficult to function. And it was difficult to function in that situation. About another 10% felt that their situation was helpless. They were overly anxious. They were very, very lonely, and felt that it was kind of a hopeless and helpless, you know, kind of situation for them. So in other words, 10% of the population of teenagers, if you use this study as an example, maybe a little bit more than that, maybe 15%, at times in their life feel very, very distressed, very lonely, impaired, and helpless. And these are the kids that not necessarily commit suicide or attempt it or even think about it, but do have some kind of risk level relative to potential suicide. So we want to look at kids who are distressed, kids who are in trouble. That's the target group that we want to keep our eye on and help them and do what we can to bring them through these difficult situations where they feel alone, where they feel very much isolated and in a sense of helplessness, whatever situation they're in, whether it's academic, or whether it's social with other kids and they're just in distressing situations, or it's in their family life, their parents' life, or wherever it is, and those are usually the areas, by the way. Whatever that is, if they feel distressed, these are the kids that we need to tap on the shoulder and say, listen to me, let's talk, let's commune together, let's spend some time together. And that time together is a time of listening to them. You may want them to listen to you, but they won't listen to you until first you listen to them. You know, there was a gentleman who was with the California Highway Patrol. His name was Kevin Briggs. He had the assignment of the Golden Gate Bridge for many, many years. I think it was almost some 20 years that he patrolled that area of San Francisco, just the bridge. And he was often called, regularly called, when somebody would come on the bridge and attempt to jump off or threaten to jump off, and he would be the one that would respond. And what he said, he saved about 200 of these kids from jumping. He didn't save them all, but he saved about 200 of these kids from actually jumping off the bridge. And he did it through the act of listening. He says in a quote, "I listened them off the ledge. I listened them off the ledge." And I think that's kind of the concept, is that when you're listening to a kid, you're paying attention to the kid's need, to his circumstances, to his situation, to his story, whatever story he has to tell. If you're listening, if you listen, that kid responds. Because that's what the kid's always wanted. But that's what the kid probably did not get, which led him to the bridge and led him to the ledge of the bridge, because no one took time to listen. And this Kevin Briggs, CHP officer, he said, "I may spend 90 minutes with a kid before he'd come back off the bridge and come off the ledge, but," he said, "maybe I would only talk about 4 or 5 minutes of that time. The rest of it was listening." And I think that's the answer. And I think that's the skill. That's the technique that we as adults, whether we be parents or teachers or friends or whomever, that's our technique to use when a kid comes to us and he's in a suicidal situation. He's in a desperate situation. He's in a depressing situation. He's in a lonely situation. He's in a situation where he feels helpless. That's the technique. Sit and listen. And talk maybe 5 minutes out of 90 minutes. The rest of the time is spent listening. So that's really the essence of how you get these kids to back off from the threat, you know, of suicide or in the threat of taking their life one way or the other, whether it's on the bridge or wherever it might be. It's the duty of the one that intercedes to have the listening skills, the listening time, the listening patience, but to do so with sincerity, to do so with honor, and to do so with concern and empathy and compassion and caring. Because then the kid will be open to the next step in the intervention, such as getting professional help. But that's where it starts. Now, let's take a look at just this whole idea of, you know, suicide. You know, in where I live in Central California, from the years 2013 to 2015, there were only 10 suicides by teenagers. Well, that's a lot. That's about 5 per year. But the next year, 2016, there were 11. So it went from about 5 per year to 11 the next year. That's a substantial increase. Something's going on with our kids. We're missing the boat as parents. We're missing the boat as friends. We're missing the boat as grandparents. We're missing the boat as neighbors. We aren't connecting with a large number of our kids and driving them into a state of loneliness and despair and helplessness and just feeling that they're unwanted or unneeded. And we need to change that. We need to alter that, you know, very, very, you know, significantly. Now, let's just take a look at a couple things with these kids who are at risk. First of all, you have to remember, once a kid gets through a situation that he's in, he's generally not going to be okay. He's going to be there, okay thereafter. That's pretty much the case. Just because a kid comes to a point of desperation and maybe even thinks about suicide doesn't mean that that's a life sentence, that that's going to be for the rest of his life. No. That's not true at all. It's that situation that he's facing. Sometimes we call this situational suicide, situational depression. If that situation can change, the whole idea of suicide changes. The whole idea of depression changes. So it's a matter of getting the kid where he is, helping him through that situation successfully, and then moving him on into life so that he can handle these kind of situations again in the future. And professional help is generally what's needed. So it's not a life sentence. Just because the kid comes to this point at one point in time, at age 13 or age 16 or whatever, does not mean that that's going to be a life sentence. Don't ever think that way. But do take it seriously. Do take it very conscientiously. And make sure that that kid is listened to, that kid is connected with somebody who can help them, and that kid is followed through by family and friends and grandparents and the therapist that they work with, that there's a good follow through and a good benefit that will come, you know, from that. Now, what are some of the things you look for? You know, what are some of the things that alert you, you know, to the fact that this kid's at risk? And you better start taking heed. You better start doing something. So let's take a look at some of these factors that just are on the surface that just should capture your attention, should just bring you to a point by saying, ooh, I better watch this. I better deal with it. I better talk. I better listen. I better, you know, connect this kid with somebody. I better do something. All right, number one is displaying extreme mood swings. Sometimes we refer to these as kind of bipolar. But when a mood swing takes place, a person could get into the depths of depression real quickly, and he's at risk. You go from the height of energy and happiness and enthusiasm all the way down into the depths of depression and loneliness and withdrawal and social isolation. That's when the kid is at risk, when he's down in the dumps. And it happens periodically through mood swings, or it happens suddenly through some type of a mood swing. So that's number one. Watch for mood swings, particularly extreme mood swings. Number two, watch for the withdrawing and the feeling of withdrawal and isolation. You know, kids feel threatened, feels very much alone, feel very much unempowered, helpless. Well, they withdraw into isolation. And when a kid draws into isolation and he's feeling depressed along with that, pay attention to it. Deal with it. Confront. Start listening. Start talking. Start interacting. Start connecting this kid with somebody. Okay? That's number two. Number three, if a kid is sleeping too much or too long of a period of time, prolonged sleeping is not good. You know, every kid needs 8 to 10 hours. And maybe occasional nap and maybe occasional extended period of time of sleeping. Maybe an afternoon nap of 3 hours, maybe. Or maybe once in a while they might sleep 8, 9, 10, 12 hours. But that's rare. But if a kid is sleeping long hours regularly, something's going on. He's escaping. He's using sleep as a way to escape something. What is that? You better start asking questions. You better start listening. You better start looking around. You better start dealing with it. Start talking to friends. Start observing. Connect with this kid. And get that kid connected with somebody that can be of help. Okay, so that's the next one. Here's another one. If a kid starts feeling very nervous and anxious and agitated, and he's behaving kind of recklessly, kind of out of character, you know, for his usual way of behaving, just kind of making decisions that are just nonsense and don't make any sense whatsoever, or engage in behavior patterns that are just out of line, just never have done that kind of thing before, those are things you notice. Take action. Deal with those. Don't overlook those. It's just a teenager thing. Some of that might be very, very telling, okay? Here's another one. Watch for the use of alcohol and drugs. You know, if that kid is starting, he has not used alcohol and has not used drugs and now starting to use it, that's a sign that something's going on. More than just peer pressure, more than just kind of social influence. This might be an attempt to really drown out one's internal pain, one's emotional pain. Look at that as an option, because that is common for these kids that move on into the world of potential suicide. So look for that kind of drug use, particularly something that suddenly comes into a child's life when that has not been the case whatsoever. And remember, these kids are studying drugs at age 12. So if your teenager is using, you better pay attention to that. Even if they're not suicidal in it, you better pay attention to that drug use. That's not a good thing, you know, at all, in any given situation or circumstance. Okay, what about if a kid starts talking about unbearable pain? He's feeling he's trapped in kind of pain, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain. If that kid talks about some kind of hurt and pain, pay attention. That's a sign. That's an indication that something's going on within this kid and he wants to get rid of that pain. And that's what suicide often is. It's a cry for help, that's true. And it's a cry for the pain to end, not for life to end, but for the pain to end. The kids don't like pain. They don't have pain tolerance. They have very, very low pain tolerance. So when they experience pain, particularly emotional pain, they want to end it. They want to get rid of it. And suicide is not usually the answer. But they talk about that as a way to get rid of the pain. And your job in listening, your job in dealing with them, your job in getting them help is kind of going to a pain specialist, kind of an emotional pain specialist, if you will. Connect with your psychologist for that, okay? And if your kid is talking about helplessness and hopelessness and having no reason to live and that nobody likes him and there's no purpose in life for him and there's no place in life for him and there's no connection in life for him, that's a danger sign. That means he's isolated. That means he's withdrawn. That means he's a kid unto himself and disconnected, if you will. That's not a good sign. That's not a good sign at all. Take action on that kind of a sign or symptom, if you will. Now, here's the more serious ones. These are more at the critical point where you have no option other than to take professional assistance and help and deal with it. And strike while the iron's hot, if you will. If a kid is looking for a way to kill himself, if he's searching online for how people commit suicide, look at that. That's really kind of a pay attention. or if a kid is playing with knives or playing with some instrument that could be used in a suicide attempt, you better pay attention to that. That's not just a kid playing or kind of wanting to learn how to use a knife for some carving, wood carving purpose or whatever. No, you make sure that that is addressed, and that if he has these kind of signs of looking for some instrument to kill himself, and has these emotional signs of disconnect and pain and loneliness and so on, boy, that's a combination there that you cannot overlook. That's really kind of getting up that high level of likelihood. So deal with that one. And then here's another one. The whole idea of just talking about it, just saying, I'm dreaming about it, or I'm talking, or I'm thinking about it, or I want to discuss this with you. What is it like to die? What is it like to kill oneself? Where does one go if one dies? Can one go to heaven if one kills himself? When they're asking those kind of questions, that's pretty serious. You can answer them, but you better put them in touch with a professional person that can answer the deeper question, the more emotional, painful questions that they're asking and needing answers to, and helping you connect with the kid as a parent or as a family member or as a friend or whatever it might be. That's very important. Now, here's two more. These are the critical ones. These are the tough ones. If a kid is giving away things, his own personal possessions, you pay attention to that. Be giving it to family members, giving it to friends, you know, giving it to even people who are not friends, giving it to a teacher, somebody he likes, somebody he admires, or whatever. When he's giving away his personal possessions, that's a danger sign. That's a tough one. And you need to be very, very interactive and very responsive to a kid who's giving away his stuff. Okay? Especially when he feels depressed, especially when he feels despondent, especially when he feels isolated and lonely and sleeps long hours and withdraws and just stays to himself. Boy, those are the critical signs, and you want to deal with that. And here's the toughest one. This is the one that we can't overlook. If a kid attempts it once, be careful for the second. If he attempts it twice, be very, very careful for the third time. In other words, if there has been an attempt, that's an indicator that when that kid gets into a suicidal situation again, that increases the likelihood of success the next time. So this is a tough one. These are the sorry situations to be in. But you know, you as the parent, you as the adult, you as the friend, you as the neighbor, you as the church member, you as the Sunday school teacher, you as the pastor, you know, you as the individual who has some connection with the kid, whether it be a teacher or a parent of a friend or whatever, we're all in the same boat. When a kid shows critical signs, like I've just mentioned, come into action, come together, surround that kid, engross that kid in attention and listening attention, and listen to his needs, listen to his cry, listen to his hurt, listen to his pain, and then deal with it. Answer it. Fulfill it. Resolve it. Solve it. And connect with that kid, with a therapist that's experienced and knowledgeable and mature, that can help your child work through and think through this time of crisis in their life and prevent them from having another such crisis, or how to get through that crisis should another crisis come into their life. Connect with a professional psychologist. Maybe the kid needs medication, not necessarily, but if he does, that can be arranged. The psychologist can arrange for that. But all these kids don't necessarily need medication, but they do need a listening ear. You know, many years ago I taught on the faculty of the Department of Psychology at Baylor University down in Waco, Texas. And I was approached one time by a group of students who were setting up a hotline, and they wanted to know what to call it. And talking to these kids, we came up with a title for the hotline. We called it the Listening Ear. The Listening Ear. And these kids all took turns to cover that hotline 24 hours a day. so that if any student on campus found themselves in a time of difficulty, found in a time of stress and distress and loneliness and threat and personal risk and danger, they could call this hotline, the Listening Ear. It was announced on campus. It was put in the newspaper. It was put all over in posters. The telephone number was anonymous, and kids started to call. And I tell you what, those kids called and called, and they got many, many, many calls throughout the year from their fellow students. And they interceded. And I don't think there was one suicide that happened in that particular year. But they had many calls. Because what did they do? They stayed on the phone and they listened. They listened for minutes. They listened for hours sometimes to a kid and just listened and talked, and helped connect that kid with the counseling center and helped him connect with his friends. They provided a support system and had him call back again and again and again just to keep the contact alive. So it works. It works. You can be the listening ear. You need to be the listening ear. If your kid is at risk, or you know somebody at risk, or you know a parent who lives in a home where there is risk, be a listening ear. Reach out. Put them in touch with somebody that can be of help, you know, to them. That's a very important concept, you know, to get through and to follow up on and make sure, you know, that it happens. So you can do it, and you can do it reasonably well, even if you're not trained. Even if you're not experienced, you just do what comes naturally. You love. You show care. You show empathy. You take time to listen. And you just relate. You just touch the life and the soul of another individual. And there's a lot of healing that takes place right there. That is the point of healing. Okay, anyway, nice to have you with me today. And this has been the Psychology Report. And I would like to say this to you. That in every community there is in Fresno a rescue mission for men and women who are homeless and who are on the street and who are in times of great distress and have nowhere to turn. The gospel mission is sometimes as referred to, or as just the local mission. And put these people in touch with the mission of your community, because they have people that can be of help in need when there's a need, just as we have spoken about today, but also needs for food and for shelter and jobs and getting their life reorganized and straightened out. So the mission of your community is an extremely strong and important resource that you can draw upon and you can direct people to. All these people are standing on the street corner. It doesn't help with you giving them $10, but it would help a lot more if you put them in touch with the rescue mission of the community. That's where their life can be turned around. So that's the answer to these kind of situations, and you can do that. Now, let me just want to say one more thing to you. The rescue mission of your community thrives and lives on and exists on donations, on people like you, companies like your company, offices like your office, who just dip into the pot a little bit and give them some money, send them some money. And I recommend you do that, because that's where the action is, and they need that money to exist and to continue on. So whatever the rescue mission is of you, the city in which you live, send them a few bucks this week, okay? You'll be glad you did, and they'll be happy for it, and you will have certain goodness come to your life as a result of that. Okay, hey, good. Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye.